Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another edition of program Dare to Be Different. Just wonderful, I beg your pardon, wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming, medium wave 1548 in Satellite Islam. Looking out the studio's brilliant sunshine, beautiful day, blue skies, and we are truly, truly blessed. And when we look at what's happening in different parts of the world, yes, our heart goes out to people who find themselves in very difficult conditions. This morning helping me along has been Muhammad Bilal, who's going to be engineering for us. Alhamdulillah, Jazakumullah, Muhammad. And he'll be taking your calls, and you can join our conversation anytime. Number to dial 854-1548. And this morning we've got a wonderful, wonderful guest, no stranger to Islam. And someone who's come in, she comes from a family of horticulturists. They run a number of garden centers, and it's an absolute pleasure to always talk to her. And that is Kerry Goodwin. Hi, good morning, Kerry.
Good morning, how are you?
Very well, thank you, very well. And how are you keeping this morning, Kerry?
Very good.
You know, so how was the run? I know you just got in after a run. How's the run been? Extremely hot this morning?
It was beautiful. Actually, we were running, and then I saw some beautiful birds along the river. We were along the Bromfontein Spruit.
Okay.
And, you know, I think, as you were saying earlier, it's just so beautiful to be out and about, and we must just be thankful for the small things that we have and the environment that we're surrounded by.
Yes, and I was looking at an article last week, and it was in the local one of the papers, and they spoke about Splendor Nursery situated near the Delta. And is that where you're running?
That's what I do normally. Actually, further, I was further down more towards the Magaliesberg today. Okay. So it's actually the Crocodile River. But, we go horse riding in the Delta at least once a week, and it's just gorgeous.
Must be fantastic, you know, being able to see that. Now, Kerry, you know, you've been running and you've been going out and about. What is your thing, take on, you know, we've had weather patterns and people, and I loved the article that said even the weathermen can't tell you what's happening these days. They say one thing and you find, lo and behold, something else happening. Your take on the weather, Peter Kerry?
Well, actually, you know, we thought with the drought that we had towards the end of last year, November, December, we had heard that we were only going to have rain now in March. And then we were so pleasantly surprised with the beautiful rain that we had at the beginning of January. And I think it was a big relief to a lot of people. I think, sadly, not all the provinces have had rain yet.
Yes, and I think that is, that's something
at
that...
At the same time, here in Johannesburg, we are so fortunate for what rain we have had.
And, you know, we were told, like we said, coming the early rains would only be in round about March. And like you said, we've had lots of rain. But it hasn't been all province. It hasn't been widespread. And the drought hasn't still broken.
No, I think the rain and, you know, even the hail that we've had, it's all been very localized. I mean, I know I was gardening last week, and I was so excited. I had planted new trees in my garden, well, bushes under my trees. I'd planted Macayabella. And then it started raining, and I thought, oh, yay, I don't have to worry about watering my plants now that I've planted them. And then I found a packet of grass seeds. So I thought, oh, I'm going to go and scatter the grass seed to oversow my grass. And I went outside, and because it was under the trees, the rain that we were having was so soft and gentle that it wasn't even reaching the actual new plants that I'd planted. I thought, uh-oh, I'm going to be putting a hose pipe on in the rain. This is really not the done thing. But it was just very soft, gentle rain. And as I say, the new plants, they weren't getting wet at all. So I think, as you said, the rain that we're having is it's very intermittent, and it's not the usual rain. We have storms where we have those flash floods. I think we had that about 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And all we're having is very gentle, but it's not almost hitting the earth, so we're not filling up our water tables, and I think that's the concern.
Yes, you raised two things, you know, about the rain coming. While it's gentle rain, it's intermittent, but it's not sort of the rain that we really would be, or that we are, you know, that we're familiar with. Another article said, you know, that, you know, I beg your pardon, specifically the Highveld, we're known for our, you know, afternoon thunder showers, lots of lightning, and that hasn't happened this year. We've had some thunder showers, we have, and for that we're truly grateful, but not the normal patterns that we are sort of accustomed to.
No, as I say, I always remember when we were younger and how, you know, sports used to be cancelled because there was either lightning or we couldn't go swimming and that sort of thing. And those are completely, the type of rain that we're having now is far, far different to that. And we seem to have actually a lot of rain in the early mornings and quite late at night. So it's definitely changing. But I think throughout the world, the weather patterns are changing. You know, we've had friends who went overseas to try and go skiing or to try and see some snow, even late now in January, February. And there was very little snow. If it was, it was intermittent, maybe for a day, and then it was gone. So I just think, you know, global warming is something that we're having to deal with, and we have to try and adapt to it and suit it better. I mean, the heat that we're having is also quite, we had a bit of a relief from the heat recently. You know, so our temperatures dropped from the consistent 38 to about 33. But even that's still much warmer than we would expect at this time of the year in Gauteng.
Yeah, that is my next question. You know, we find that the heat coming on, and for this week it has been extremely, extremely hot. I know yesterday, it was Saturday and Friday, you know, people saying, well, you know, is that the heat of this, is it still around with us? And then normally February is our warmest month, it's our driest month, it is that. But like you said, it's not the temperatures that we're sort of accustomed to.
No, I mean, you want it to be like late 20s, early 30s, but it just seems more consistently so much warmer than that. And I think, you know, your plants are telling you that as well. When you go and look at your plants now, they're either saying, please water me or please provide some shade for me. Because they're not used to this consistent heat either. I always remember when we were studying down at Stellenbosch how there February used to be the hottest month. You know, the students arrive back and it's boiling, boiling hot. And I've heard from friends in the Cape as well that, I mean, and we saw the fires also last month, that it's been very hot and dry there. And so I just think throughout the country, you know, apart from the lack of water, is this consistent more than higher temperatures than we used to. And we have to take those into consideration when we are gardening.
Yes, and like they said, the El Nino effect, it can last between 2 and 7 years. That's what they say. You know, that's what they're giving predictions. Of course, they could be wrong. Of course, we could have it just for 2 years. It could continue for 7 years. And that's a concern if it does. We have in the country being parched dry, and we know that we're a country with scarce water resources. And it puts a huge challenge for everyone. You know, water tables, like you said, are low. Our dams are dry in certain parts of the country, and all of us have to play our part in which we can conserve water, in which we can find ways. And I think this year specifically, when I, you know, 2015 started out, everyone was very optimistic, we're going to have beautiful rains, and we started out gardening, but this hasn't been the case. We found that many people said, well, fine, this is not for me, I'm giving up because, you know, I can't understand. But I think if you had gone in with this, that gardening is about life itself. It's the lessons that you learn. There's no straight lines. You know, there's curves in that. And it depends how you maneuver and how you are able to work around this that will give you the success. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I know I'm busy starting a new garden at home. And before I put any type of plant or anything into my ground, I'm actually trying to make sure that my soil can hold the most amount of water possible to make it readily available for the plant. So it's not consistently moist. It's not like a swamp or a bog or anything like that, or wetland. But it's just, I'm putting in lots of twigs and bark and all sorts of different organic matter. You know, we've spoken before about my bokashi bin. I've put my bokashi in, so, and lots of mulch. So it's lots of organic matter that can break down slowly over time. But while it's breaking down, it's going to hold on to the little micropores of water that are little micro droplets of water, so that it makes it easy for the plant to have available when it needs it. And I think that's where gardeners are really going to have to look at now, because you say, you know, they don't want to consistently have to change their plants or put in new plants because they died because of the heat or lack of water. But if you have good soil, you know, lots of compost and lots of organic matter in your soil, then it does all hold onto the water, and they also provide air holes for places for the water to sit in the soil. And that's going to give you a healthy plant, you know, especially when we start talking about our vegetables later. They're getting their nutrients from the soil, so the healthier your soil is. And I think that's what gardeners forget. You know, I think they buy beautiful plants, whether it be vegetables or flowering plants, and they look gorgeous in the nursery. And then they take them home and they put them into maybe a sandy soil or a clay soil or somewhere where the plant says, you know, ugh, do you really want me to grow here? You know, and I just think it's so sad because they have such high expectations for the plant. And it's almost like us trying on a pair of shoes or something and the shoes are too small, you know, or they're too big. When you try them on in the shop and they feel fine, and then you get home and you walk around in them a little bit and you're like, oh, they're not perfect. And I think that's sometimes what we're doing with our plants, is we're taking them home putting them in a bed that hasn't been prepared. And especially because we're very much on, I want to say for myself, I'm very much on instant gratification. You know, I want to plant my spinach and I want to pick it the next day. And I'm not giving it the right conditions. So now this is why I'm really teaching myself a lesson in patience. And I'm starting at the beginning. And like, if I cut branches from a tree, then I've left a little patch in my veggie garden where I'm actually am putting those branches down to slowly decompose and to create an environment where earthworms can start breeding. So I have a very rich soil, and that's really where all gardeners should start.
I think that's a fantastic way of starting out, you know, and I think an idea that many of us should really look into, because no matter what you buy, if your soil is not going to be a soil that's rich and that's going to be able to sustain life, you're going to buy plants, and like you said, we all love these beautiful plants when they're in the nursery. We say, wow, we're going to take all of that home, come home, and you find that it's not, like you said, you know, the right plant, it won't thrive, it won't do well. And your idea of enriching the soil, I think, is a wonderful one. Just take us through some of the steps you've taken. So you've taken a whole lot of branches and you just laid them down in a bare patch, and then you did you take some other material as well, or what did you do? How did you enrich the soil before you continue, before you went into planting itself?
Yeah, so for my veggie garden, I've actually made a raised veggie garden instead of digging into the ground itself. So I've still got the soil underneath, but the soil underneath is sadly not so good. And then I've taken the, I've chopped back some of the branches of the trees, so then I've gone and layered that on top of my soil. And then on top of that, I've got grass clippings from the complex because they're just not doing anything with it. So I collect the bags of grass clippings that they've collected, and I've put a layer of grass clippings down. And then I went and went to the nursery and I got some compost, and I've put a layer of compost. And then I'm doing that again now. So my compost, on top of my compost layer, I'm putting a layer of leaves. And so it's not the stuff, apart from the compost, it's not stuff that I've had to buy. It's stuff that I've found in the environment that people are actually putting in their garbage bins and throwing away. And so I want to say I'm one of those environmental scavengers. I'm walking around where I'm living, and I'm looking for things that people throw away. You know, as I say, I keep all my veggie skins that I keep as well, and I'm throwing that in. So it is a slow process. I mean, if you wanted to do it instantly, you go to the garden centers and you buy compost, and it's got all that organic matter in it. But it's also, it's nice to have it for sustainably, and to have it sustainably, you have to have some bark, some twigs, some leaves, so that over time, those will slowly break down and then form the compost. But at the same time, you want the compost to be there. You know, a lot of people, especially in their veggie gardens, they put crawl manure. So it's another thing that you could add into the mix. And you just layer it all over time. And what will happen is as these break down, you can put your veggies then in the top. And then as they break down, they're holding onto the water and providing nutrients. So it's just, yeah, lovely ideas.
Sorry, Kelly. Do you put any soil on? I was just trying to, you know, picture the soil. So you've laid it with the twigs and bark, and you've laid it with the leaves and the clippings and so forth. Where does the soil come in? Because I know you've got your soil at the bottom, so you've got a raised platform, a raised sort of garden. How and when would you put in the soil? Do you put in any soil, and when would that come in? What type of soil would you put in?
I would only put the compost in. So I do go and get a bag of compost from the garden center, and I put it in on top of my leaf layer or my grass layer. So I do have one layer of soil, and it's probably, it's going to be 15 to 20 centimeters deep. But it is compost, which is still made up of organic matter. I don't put any, say, topsoil in, because topsoil to me is just soil. And that's what we put on our grass to level out our grass. But I don't, it's not, I want to say it's all more the compost that you need. Okay. And so I know we were doing a gardening project at Pirates for 1 year. And actually this is where I learned how to do this layering of your soil so that you have sustainable production of compost within your flower beds. Because as a gentleman that we were working with, I was very much, let's just go and get 10 cubes of soil, put it in the ground, and, you know, make it so people can start picking their vegetables straight away. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, Terry, that's a lovely idea, and we could definitely do that, except we're going to use the compost instead of soil. So I said, no, compost. I meant compost. And then he said, but if you want it to be sustainable and so that people, if they forget to water, you still have particles and, as I said, the bark or the tree bits that are going to hold on to a little bit of the water, then we must rather layer it. And so that's where I learned about the layering. And it really does help in terms of, because we don't have a lot of water now, and I know where I live, we have very serious water restrictions, not even from the government, from our body corporate. And so we only allowed to water our gardens once a week.
Wow.
Yeah, they're very strict. And so you have to have all these contingency plans to allow water to sit in your soil, but not, as I say, form a marsh, because none of your vegetables will ever grow where their roots are consistently wet. So there has to be drainage, but they have to be able to grow into the water.
Well, thank you. I think it's such a wonderful way and such a sustainable way of starting out a garden. And if people wanting to, I think that's the right way to go. I've got a call in line. Let's take that one before we continue. Assalamu alaikum. Please go ahead. Hello, assalamu alaikum.
Hello, walaikum salam.
Please go ahead.
Can I just ask a question that I've got an aloe plant.
Mm-hmm.
And now my plant is having this white fungus on it. What do I use or get something from the garden place or something to spray on it, or how do I go about it with it?
You've got an aloe plant and you say it's infected with a white, is it a powdery type of...
It looks like powdery type of fungus on it.
Okay, you listen off the edge.
On the edge, to that.
Right. Kerry, we've got a call in about an aloe plant, which she finds has been infected. Any idea what we should use?
So the aloes get two types of, it's either a fungus, which it sounds like this lady has. If she takes her finger and she can rub it off easily, then it definitely is a fungus. If you have to almost use your nail to scratch it off, then it's going to be more a scale. And scale is a type of insect, so you'd have to use an insecticide like oleum. It's a very nice one to use on aloes. But for the fungus, I think we would use something like Margaret Roberts has a very nice fungicide. Ludwig's also has a very nice natural fungicide that you could use. And you could just use a general fungicide because it's a powdery mildew. And so, or if you wanted to go the chemical route, you would use something like Fungi-Nix.
Okay. Thank you very much for that, Kerry. Now, going back to your way of a sustainable garden, I think that's such a fantastic idea, and I'm sure that we could all do it because it's not a costly thing, and you've raised it, so it makes it so much easier to work, and eventually when it breaks down, even the soil at the bottom will become enriched. Is that right?
Well, that's what I'm hoping for, because as I said, when I went out to try and plant the grass seed, I thought, oh, I'll take my fork and, just loosen the soil a little bit to throw the grass into, and then I would put a layer of topsoil or lawn dressing on top of that. And my soil was so hard, I couldn't even get the fork into it. And it was, as I say, it had been raining. So normally when it rains, the soil softens. I was like, yo, this is like bedrock. So I didn't have much success planting my grass seed. I'm going to have to wait for much heavier rains. But hopefully my soil, as I say, as you said, it breaks down, it will enrich the soil underneath. And it's also, what it's going to do is attract insects. So the earthworms and the microbes that help, break down your soil or provide nutrients into your soil. That's what I'm trying to do by providing the different layers.
Now, we get to a question where many people find that, that this is unsightly and they don't want hojas in the garden, they don't want these insects. What do you say to them?
Well, actually, my mom and I were chatting about that recently, and I said, we try and get rid of the insects and we put the pesticides down. But we also have to remember that pesticides or the insects have a life cycle. And so you might have, I know at the moment, I just feel sorry for everyone because the lily borer is munching everybody's clivias and their agapanthus. Last week when I was working in the garden center, we'd only been open for an hour, and I think I'd probably sold more pesticides than I had plants. And it was just so sad, but it was just because people's plants were being completely annihilated by insects. But at the same time, they're going to chomp and eat as much as they can, the caterpillars, but then they're going to pupate and they're going to turn into beautiful moths or butterflies. So So you need to allow some of the insects. And I know it's very difficult, you know, because, as you say, you want a beautiful garden and you don't want leaves munched and that type of thing within your garden. And it does seem that the insects in some of our gardens, because they're so much smaller now, they're just chewing everything. But it is a life cycle, and so you're going to have the caterpillar, which is going to form a pupa, which is going to form the butterfly. And you almost just have to be patient and allow for some of them to be able to do that, because they are the ones who are, you know, pollinating the plants. It's the same with the ants at the moment. You know, I don't know if it's the same for you, but at home we just have ants everywhere.
Yes, it's all over. You just find ants coming up and they're foraging, looking for you know, food and so forth. So they also, it's like you said, it's part of the cycle.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're an indication that there's rain coming. You know, as soon as you start seeing the ants around your house, it means they actually know that there's rain coming, and so they're moving up from underground because they don't want to drown in all the water, and they come in to say, well, please, I just need to find somewhere dry because the rain is coming, or that they're actually looking for water because they're quite thirsty. I'm finding quite a few near my bath and my taps.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they just, you know, they're also part of the life cycle, and I mean, the ants, what they're doing for the environment in terms of moving matter from one place to another is very, very important, and very important in your soil structure for them to take things, say some of the bark chips that you have, from one place to another. So I agree, we definitely don't want them in our homes or anything, but if they're in your garden, they're doing a good job. They're creating little air holes within your soil, you know, and so we just have to try and find that line of balance between having insects in our garden and appreciating them for the job that they do and not trying to kill all of them, and then actually, you know, just not allowing them too much into our house.
And the other question, of course, is the one that you find many people sort of, well, you know, sort of have that feeling when they see these earthworms, wow, we're not going to go near them. You know, those are type of creepy crawlies and we don't want them to come near us. And they play such an important role in our gardens. I think those are things that are so important, you know. I think that we must understand their role as well.
Mm. Well, I was going to say, I know for us, my nephew and niece have started fishing with their dad. And so actually we take, sadly, we take some of the earthworms that we find in the soil and they use them for bait on their fishing rods. And then my dad was even saying to me the other day, you know what, I think some of these earthworms that we buy on the sides of the road for our fishing, we should just put them back into our soil. And they're not the most pleasant insects at all to have around, but they do provide such an important role in, again, aerating the soil, providing pathways for the water to run. They make it easier for your plants to grow. And I think one of the most important things with the plant is that the more loose and the air holes that you provide in the soil, the easier it is for the roots to go and spread and make a stronger plant. Because it's not what's on top of the plant, you know, the leaves and the flowers, that's all beautiful. But that's not what actually is feeding the plant and providing structure for the plant. And it's the roots. And so the stronger your roots are and the more that your roots can spread out and easily grow. And, you know, the one thing I love with gardening is some people are so enthusiastic and they put their hose pipes on, but just a little bit every day. And I think, please don't do that. Rather water for a long time, but less seldom, so that your roots, you're actually giving your roots exercise. You know, you're forcing them to go and look for water and to grow into those little nooks and crannies within the soil. So it's almost like running, or I think running. I'm not a very good one at running. But you don't want to run, you know, 100 meters or 200 meters. I know I wear a pedometer, and I only manage to maybe walk 5,000 steps a day. And then Discovery said to me, that's not healthy enough. If you want to do it, you need to run like 10,000 steps a day to be healthy. And that's almost the same with our watering. You don't want to just give a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. You want to do it properly, less seldom, because then you're really encouraging the plant to actually do its job. And the root's job is to go and look for water. You know, if you just put a little bit of water in your garden, just surface at the top. I mean, you know, the one thing, for I talk so much, the one thing we were talking about is mulch.
So sorry, Kerry, can we just stop here and we continue with after the news break?
Oh,
because
no.
I said they're waiting. I do. Well, we'll chat about it. And someone just sent an SMS here saying, just want to read it out to you. It says, thanks to Kerry for the lovely idea of using branches and a lovely program. So that's coming. And the people are listening, so we take on the calls and we can talk about mulch when we come back. Stay
yes,
tuned.
Yes, for sure.
Okay.
Thank you very much,
Steve. Okay. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, dear to be different, my name is Ismail Briava. Just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's by the audio streaming Midway 1548 and Satellite Islam. And we have a wonderful, wonderful guest, and that's Kerry Goodwin, and she's given us some wonderful ideas, fantastic ideas, and something that's easily able to be implemented. But I must add a word of caution. It takes a lot of patience to be able to do. But the end results, I think, is going to be phenomenal. Hi, good morning, Kerry.
Good morning again.
I was saying, whilst it's, you know, a fantastic way to do things, I know that we shouldn't be looking for instant gratification. It's a long process. Is that correct?
It is, definitely. But while we were taking a break now, I was just thinking, you know, the garden centers these days are trying to cater for both needs. So if in the meantime it's taking a long time to get your flower bed to put in the bark, and like we were talking about earlier, and is that you can go to the garden centers and get ready-made, or they're already growing with the fruit on them, a lot of the veggies. You know, some of the garden centers are starting to grow the veggies in bigger pots, and they realize that homeowners don't always have place for big gardens. And so you put in your fruits and your veggies and your herbs into pots around your house or on your balconies or in your patios. And so those ones, we can't use the layering method that we talked of, or we could slowly in a pot. But there you would just use good potting soil. And, I mean, when I was walking around the nursery yesterday, I was picking chilies off our chili plants. I think our team were like, we're supposed to sell those. You're not supposed to be picking them. And, you know, we had these beautiful prickly pears, and all the fruit was ripe on them. So our team, they knew all about prickly pears, you know, from when they were growing up. And for me, it's quite a new thing. So I was busy tasting the prickly pears, and there is a lot of, as I said, because the garden centers have realized that people want the instant stuff, you know, we can't always wait. There are spinach plants where you could literally pick the spinach off already and have it in your salad this afternoon for lunch or for dinner tonight or something. So they're trying to cater for everyone, for those people who are patient, or certain crops obviously you want to grow from seed, and then others, they're there waiting for you. I mean, I'm very excited. This week we're going to get cucumber plants into the nursery. And so they're miniature patio cucumbers. I'm like, yay. I mean, I don't have to keep those cucumbers in my fridge for so long, and then half of it ends up because I didn't eat it all being earthworm food.
Kerry, let's talk about food security, I think. No, let's go back. You remember we spoke about the mulch and we were saying something about the mulch. Let's complete that conversation.
Okay. So what I was just saying with the mulch, and it actually almost goes back to the life cycle of the insects, is we all put in this extra mulch into our gardens to protect the soil, and so we don't have to water as much, which is fantastic. But because of that lovely environment the mulch layer is providing just between our mulch and the soil, is that's why we're getting more ants. Because, you know, the ants are eating all little microorganisms and moving, as I said earlier, those microorganisms from one place to another. So there we're doing a wonderful thing for our soil and we're replenishing it, but at the same time we are attracting more insects into our garden and their surrounds. So you just have to be careful, because you don't want to go and do something wonderful like having good mulch and then you see more ants and so you go and put down a pesticide. I think you have to realize that part of that is the cycle of gardening. So we do want you to mulch, and, you know, we do want you to have really good soil, but along with that, you are going to get some ants that are going to be attracted to it. And it's not really a good idea then to go and sprinkle pesticide onto your mulch, which might kill the ants, because then you're kind of defeating the object that helps at all. But I know I'm saying it and I'm thinking, sure, I can't believe I'm saying this, but please mulch, but be aware you are going to attract some insects into your garden. And they're beneficial, and that's what you need to understand.
Yes, I think this, you know, about the beneficial insects, I think those are important things, and we must understand that they have a place in this whole cycle. I think we've got to understand it's a cycle, and if you're going to destroy, you're going to break some chain of that cycle, and you're not going to get the end results that you really set out to do. Gary, I've got a couple of queries that have come through. What can I use for a lily borer, and can I sprinkle lawn clippings over my beds, or should I compost it?
Okay. If we go with the lily borer first, one of the products that we, well, there's two that we use. They're both actually pesticides, but we've tried, sometimes the lily borer does seem to be particularly ferocious this year. And so we've tried the organic route, and we just, customers find it very difficult to be consistent with the organic, because you know the organic you have to spray once a week, and then spray it again, and if you lose the pattern, then the lily borer just comes back, whereas with the chemical pesticides, they seem to be they target the insect much more easily. And so we would recommend Kemperin is a very nice one, and Garden Ripcord. It seems a little bit difficult to get Garden Ripcord at the moment, but you might be lucky, but Kemperin is a fantastic product to use.
How do you spell Kemperin, Gary?
K-E-M-P-R-I-N.
K-E-M-P-R-I-N, Kemperin.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
And then you just dilute it, the instructions are on the bottle, and you dilute it and you spray it in, and it actually even manages, because it's a contact one, it still manages to almost get into the heart of whether it be your clivias, your agapanthus, you know, those juicy plants that you do have in your garden where the lily borer are attacking.
Okay, the one about the lawn clippings, you know, can we or can't we?
The lawn clippings, you just have to understand, I would recommend that you put it into your soil layer, preferably not on top unless it is compacted, because it's also taking a lot of nutrients from the soil to break it down. So then you have your plant which is competing, and the lawn clippings, the manner in which it gets broken down, it takes... doesn't quite take nutrients, but it uses some of the elements from the soil to break down. So if you don't have anywhere to compost it, then there's never anything wrong, because it is going to eventually break down into compost. But it does almost compete with some of your plants at the same time, and that's what you just have to be careful of. And it can be, make it quite warm, the decomposition process, especially of the grass. Heats up quite a lot, and you might not want that heat on top of your soil layer. You know, if it's in your soil layer, it's much easier, because then there's soil and compost to almost distribute the heat. But if you're using it, that's why it's almost better to use mulch, leaf or mulch as on top of your soil, because they don't heat up as much as the decomposition process of the grass.
Okay, we've got another question. Are all my lavenders edible? All lavender plants edible?
Yes. Most of your lavenders are, I don't know if any of them are not edible, but you use them in very, very small quantities. So, you know, it's whether we normally use it in baking biscuits, and then we take tiny, tiny pieces, like almost, you know, the white part of your fingernail, half of that, and little bits of that in... because lavender, what the oils within the leaves, is actually quite concentrated. So you just have to be very careful in how you're using it and the quantities that you use. Rather use too little than too much.
So would that be good in a salad as well? I'm sorry about the curry, but what about salads?
You could use it in salad, but like if you're having a substantial bowl of salad, I really wouldn't put more than maybe 2 to 3 leaves.
Okay.
So it's not it's not one of the herbs like basil where you put quite a lot in. You put very, very little in. I know, you know, even when you're putting it under your pillow to sleep, to make you relax, or you're running it in your bath water, it's still just tiny quantities of it, because the oils are so concentrated within their leaves.
What I understand, it's a very potent plant, and you should be using very, very, you know, carefully, because the oils that come out of there would have adverse effects. I know that from a medical point of view, may have some of the adverse effects. Is that correct?
Yes. It's almost like salt. You know, salt, you have a pinch of salt rather than the whole lot.
Okay. Next question goes, my cousin's pomegranate tree is hanging down quite heavily. Is it with the weight of the fruit, and what can be done?
I was going to say, hopefully it's from the weight of the fruit, because the pomegranate should be looking amazing with fruit now. I know I was walking around one of our farms, and they were ripening. Oh, I couldn't wait to start eating them. So it should be the fruit, and I wouldn't worry too much about it. What you could do is you need to feed it almost with one of the fertilizers that's going to strengthen the stems, which would be 315 is a very good one.
Okay.
Or at this time of the year, it's a good one to use because it strengthens, you know, the nitrogen from the first number on your fertilizer bag. Nitrogen helps to strengthen your stems. And then the phosphorus, the middle number is for the roots, and then the last number is for your fruits and flowers. So the 315 at this time of year really, you know, helps the plant strengthen the stems, feeds the leaves, the foliage, and then produces good, healthy fruit for you.
Thank you for that. Let's go on now to, you know, it's almost that time of the year where we have people going to be looking at the garden differently, change of seasons, and we're going to be looking at perhaps planting our winter vegetables and so forth. But before we do that, we've got a call online, and we can continue with that one. Assalamu alaikum. Please go ahead.
Hello, alaikum salam. How are you?
Very well, alhamdulillah. Go ahead, Vin.
I wanted to know, I have a rosemary plant. How can you use it to make tea or in cooking?
Okay.
How do you use it?
Okay, you have a rosemary plant and you want to know how to use it. Is that just a plain rosemary? You know, because these days you've got the ginger rosemary.
Yeah.
I've seen all different types of them.
Yes.
Was it anything else? It's just you want to know how to use the rosemary plant.
Yeah, yes. How you can make tea, like, you know, put the leaves into your tea or you know how to go about it.
Okay, thank you very much.
It's a plain rosemary. Can I listen off here?
Yes, not a problem. Jazakallah, thanks for your call, Ben.
Jazakallah.
Not a problem. Bam, I beg your pardon. Gary, it is a rosemary plant. Can we use it, and how could we use it? Could we use it as a tincture? Could we use it to make tea? What other uses do we have for rosemary?
I was going to say, rosemary is more often, from what I understood, used in cooking. Like, you sprinkle a few leaves with chicken, and it makes it wonderful. One of the things we love doing the best is with the rosemary Tuscan blue that's got the long, it's quite an upright rosemary. We use it as skewers when we fry, you know, if it was chicken or meat or lamb or whatever it might be. We use it for that. So we use it more in cooking than in teas. I don't think it would be a problem. I have never tasted it as a tea myself. But then I would also just take maybe three leaves, put it in some boiling water, and I think it would make quite a delicious tea. I would add a lot of honey to it. I don't think it's going to be so sweet. But you would get the beneficial properties of the rosemary. I mean, rosemary is great for your brain and concentration. We've often said, even within our offices, instead of having sometimes indoor plants in the afternoons, you know, when you get brain fuzz, we wanted to put a rosemary in, and then when you walk past the office, you just squish the leaves in your hand, and that smell stimulates concentration, and it makes you more alert. So we thought, no, that's what we're going to do in one or two of the offices. Instead of having, like, spathiphyllum or kalanchoe, is a different type of rosemary in your indoors.
And, you know, when you talk about rosemary, I've seen a number of ones, and I was able to buy one called, you know, ginger rosemary, and I don't know, I think they've done them and sort of hybridized in some.
Yes.
Have you seen some of those, Kerry?
It actually was such a popular seller. I mean, it still is, but I couldn't believe how well it did. And, yes, it is a hybridized one, and I think that would be delicious in a tea. You know, because that slightly ginger taste as well would be amazing. But then again, just put two or three leaves in the bottom of a hot glass or in a, you know, tea strainer and put some hot water.
Thank you very much for that. And let's go continue. We don't have very much time, but I'd love to still just touch on the food security and plants that could be planted, and should we wait for it to become cooler, some ideas on food.
Okay. So at the moment, I would wait a little bit until, I want to say March, until our soil temperatures drop. So we're not really worried about the land temperatures. We need our soil temperatures to get a bit cooler before you start planting. And then start off with your root veggies. You know, it's going to be a lovely time for carrots, for radishes, those sort of things you can really put into the ground. And they'll do really, really nicely in the winter. Carrots, I mean, you could do all year round, and similar to radishes. But they do just need that little bit of a colder temperature, and they do really, really well. So those I would definitely start adding in. And then the wonderful thing about the winter and the cool temperatures is that your broccolis and your cabbage, and, you know, we've got so many different varieties of cabbage. You can choose from baby cabbages if you're going to grow them in a pot in your balcony, or, you know, the big drumhead good cabbage for coleslaw and all those sort of things. So there's quite a variety of your Brassiaceae vegetables, which is your leafy veggies, that do phenomenally well in winter with the, well, autumn, winter, when the temperature starts dropping. Again, you've got your spinaches, which will do well. Your lettuces will actually finally be able to grow and not bolt, because that's what we had in summer. It's the lettuces were so excited to grow that they just grow and went into flower, and you're like, hello, no, I didn't manage to eat you yet. So, you know, they will slow down and grow and become quite nutritious. I know they have a high percentage of water, but because their growing period will be a bit slower now, they won't bolt, and they will be tasty. And, you know, we get quite a lot of varieties of different lettuces now.
Okay.
So winter's actually a really nice time to grow. You know, we might miss the tomatoes and the basil, and those are what you should be harvesting now. And even in your basil, you know, maybe freezing it so you can put it in your pasta with pestos for the winter. And even the tomatoes, I know if I get extra ones, then I'm also busy freezing them to use in the winter time, because I'm not going to be able to grow them. But so it's, when we talk about food security, you want to talk about how...
Oh, I don't know we're going to I think we're running out of time, Kathy. We won't go in, because that's a huge subject, but I want to continue that conversation. Just a quick, I think we've got about a minute or two to go. What about Eastern vegetables? You know, we've been spoiled for choices, and now we have lots of the Eastern ones coming, the bok choy and, you know, the different ones. Is that time to plant them now, or should we wait?
You can plant them now. I'm thinking in the nurseries, we do have them available. So they also seem to go all year round. You can just keep planting them. But the main thing with all your veggies is actually to use them. You know, it's not to plant them and say, oh, I've got a vegetable garden. It's to say, I actually eat the veggies from my vegetable garden. And that's what the purpose of it is. So as long as you're using them, picking them, then you'll just see they'll keep producing for you.
The other question that I'd like, you know, you spoke about mini cucumbers, and you said that's available. Would they do well in winter, or would they do well in a patio, or how would you be able to get benefit out of this mini cucumbers?
I was going to say they would have to go onto a patio, so they won't be able to. But, I mean, you're going to get a lot of cucumbers between now and May, maybe when we're having our first frost. So rather just enjoy them, munch and crunch them while they're busy harvesting, and then you're either going to put it onto your patio for the winter to protect it, or if you leave it outside, it is going to get frosted, and then you'll have to plant new seeds in the spring and summer next year, well, later on this year.
So it is available, and just tell us something that you have on special at this moment.
Well, I was going to say, we're hopefully getting them in the nursery, but there's, I'm sure some nurseries that would have them already. And the other one that they've got is baby marrows.
Okay, so those are some of the things that you have. What do you have on special this week?
At the moment, we have chilies. When I was walking around, it's got beautiful, the chilies that you can stuff. So the La Bombo chilies, those are on special. And then we've got the red salvia. It's just a beautiful add color in your garden, quite nice and tall, 80-odd centimeters tall. So, and it's very water-hardy. Drought-hardy, so you don't need to water it a lot. But when you're missing the color, that's there for you.
And finally, just tell us, where are you situated this morning? Are you going to be in the Delta one, or are you going to be off Honeydew?
I was going to say, I'm actually off today,
okay.
But both of the nurseries are open, and I mean, when we were working yesterday, and they were lovely and busy. It was actually so nice. I think the rain has refreshed people's souls, and they want to get out into their garden again, which was very exciting for me.
And just the direction of Honeydew, about how many kilometers off the highway?
It's probably about 5 on the corner of Christian De Wet and Dolphin.
Okay, that's the one in Honeydew, and then the one near Delta Park?
And the one in Delta Park is on the corner of Marlborough and Richmond.
Okay,
so that's about 2 kilometres off Jan Smuts Avenue.
Well, thank you very much. You take care. We're going to be chatting. You know, I think there's so much still to chat. We've forgotten the conversation about... we were going to start with food security, but we'll tell you that for another time. But thank you very much. Thanks for all this wonderful, wonderful information. And I know that we're going to go back better informed, and maybe use gardening and think of gardening from a different perspective. But you take care. Enjoy the rest of the day, Kerry.
Thank you. You too. Enjoy.
Thanks, Da. Bye-bye. And that was Carrie talking to us about some of the ideas with regards to gardening, and very, very inspirational, lots and lots of ideas, and they run two very successful nurseries called Splendor Gardens, you know, colorful garden. And that's all for me, inshallah, until we meet again. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.